Welcome to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Join Jaguars General Manager Gene Smith and your host Cole Pepper as they break down the last Jaguars game and look at the next time the Jaguars take the field. We'll also take a dip inside the Gene Pool to see what makes a player stand out at his position. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith is brought to you by Baptist Health, Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Barbecue, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith begins right now.
And we welcome you in Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith, the Monday following the bye week and leading up to the Indianapolis Colts contest. Hope you had a nice break this weekend. The general manager was working away, no doubt. In fact, I saw you walking out of the building, going to scout a college game last week. How did you spend your bye week, bye weekend?
Well, certainly invested in college scouting, and then also got some quality time with my wife and my two daughters.
Always important. Since there was no Jaguars game yesterday, we will spend the bulk of this hour talking about the first half of the season and kind of use it to look back, review, and then look ahead and talk about what's coming in the second half of the season for the Jaguars. And we'll be naming or having a discussion about offensive and defensive MVPs, as well as the first half Scout's Eye unsung player. A lot of candidates in there. We'll see. If you want to, by the way, go ahead and tweet to me your Scout's Eye unsung player, and we'll treat it the same way as we usually do. And we'll give you an opportunity to win the autographed football. But let's start with some of the things that that I have thought, Gene, were real positives in the first half. And when you have a 2-6 half, sometimes you have to pull back and look a little more carefully. But it's very easy to note the defensive improvement as one of the major positives from the first half. Talking about improving over last year and really improving over the course of the first half of the season.
No question, especially with the way our offense has played to this point. When you look at a defense that's currently ranked fifth in the NFL in total defense, last year at this point it was 30th in the league. They're first in the fewest amount of explosive plays given up, and they're first in the NFL on three and outs.
What do you categorize as an explosive play?
20 yards or more. So breaking it down specifically, they've only had 18 completions of 20-plus yards against them, which is really outstanding.
Yeah, and it would be good on any year, but particularly you talk about what happened last year and see the improvement. And one of the other positives that kind of goes right in line with that are the newcomers, particularly on defense, who have come in and the kind of difference that they have made. Paul Posluszny, Dewan Landry, Drew Coleman, Lowry, Roth, Chick. It's a long list of new faces this year, guys who some of us, first time we saw them on the field was a second or third preseason game, and for some of during the regular season, guys like Chick, who came in here mid-season, and all these guys have made plays and made a difference on the defense.
They have, and really the last two games, Clint Session has really made his mark. It was unfortunate he came in late like a number of these other players. He got an injury early on, and he has really come alive as of late. So we feel very good about how all these guys have come into our locker room and fit in and certainly have given good production on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, and leadership from some of those guys as well. Posluszny's really become a leader on that defense, along with another guy who I'll mention as a positive. And it seems every week, every year, Darryl Smith seems to be one of those guys who's just a positive contributor, does his thing and doesn't go out there and look for a lot of attention about it, but he gets the job done.
He sure does. And I always compare him to Brad Meester. They're both steady, reliable, dependable players, and they've been that way their entire careers here.
And on the offensive side of the football, certainly the running game stands out. We know the problems with the passing game. We'll address some of those a little bit later on, but Maurice Jones-Drew and running the football, he's off to his best start at first half of the season. Greg Jones has had a terrific first half and continues to be a dominant blocker. What are some of the positives that you've seen on offense?
Well, it goes hand in hand with what you said, Cole. Our rushing attack, Maurice has 740 yards. Now he's averaging 4.5 yards a carry. He's got 20 rushes of 10-plus yards. And like you said, it's the best first eight games of his career. I think the other thing, when you look at him, he's second in the AFC in rushing and fifth overall, is he's been durable. Mm-hmm. He's been a guy that people know they have to stop in order to have a chance to beat the Jaguars, and he has certainly given us his best blocking, and then he's had 12 catches along with his rushes. I think one of the positives with Blaine Gabbert, certainly being a young quarterback, kind of earning his way in the league, is he's had respect for the football. Going into the Houston game, he had 116 consecutive passing attempts without interception. He came out of the game, he's still ranked, of current cornerbacks starting in the NFL, 10th with interceptions per attempt. So anytime your quarterback has respect for the football, you get a chance to win games in the NFL.
The offensive line has gotten some criticism this year. It's been a little bit of a shell game trying to get the same five guys in there, or get it, you know, injuries and some other things have made an impact. Where do you see the offensive line right now?
Well, I think we're starting to get healthy. You know, Eugene Monroe, in the games he's played well. He had an issue. Will Rackley had an issue. Those two guys are finally starting to get a chance to work together, develop some synergy. And that's what you got to have out of your whole starting five. They got to work as one, really. Brad Meester, again, has been a very consistent player. And obviously, for a guy who has started the most games in franchise history, to say that at this point in his career is a real positive. At right guard, Uche Nwore is playing as good as he's played since he's been a Jaguar. And then Guy Wimper, who's played, you know, at left tackle, right tackle, he's certainly done a good job coming into an increased role this season. And certainly Eben, in the time that he's played, and he's had a trying time here really the last 2 years, you know, he's given us an opportunity to win games. So we feel like we got a strong group there, and then we have some other backups. Bradfield started against Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. He's been a swing offensive lineman, playing both tackles and the guard spots, believe it or not. So we've got a number of guys who have contributed thus far.
All right, still to come here on the show, we're going to see what Gene thinks about the offensive and defensive MVPs of the first half of the year. We'll also have the Scout's Eye unsung player. Usually we focus on the one game, so this will be your chance to get the Scout's Eye unsung player of the first half. Not necessarily the guy who had the big numbers or the highlights, but who went above and beyond and deserves recognition, who's been heretofore a little bit unsung, and a chance for you to win. You can contact us here via Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars, or on Twitter. You can tweet to me at Cole Pepper, C-O-L-E-P-E-P-P-E-R. You can win a VIP game day experience to the Jaguars-Texans game on November 27th from Gate. You'll get four game day tickets, four VIP Sky Patio Lounge passes, and a limo for four people to and from the game. Stop by your nearby Gate gas station to register. Jaguars fans, put Gate in your tailgate. We're back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith as we get set for the second half of the season right here on Jaguars Radio. We welcome you back. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. As we get ready for the second half of the season, it's November the 7th today. Tomorrow, November the 8th, J.D. Byrider invites you to their dealership at 8864 Atlantic Boulevard to have cookies with the Jaguars rookies. They'll be there from noon till 2, signing autographs and sharing cookies with you. All right, welcome back. Tackle some of the things that have happened in the first half of the season. Also, you can tweet your questions, comments, and Scout's Eye picks to me at Cole Pepper, or you can go on Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars. Go under the thread that's been started with the Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith thread and put your comments in there. We'll get to some of those here in just a bit. All right. Offensive and defensive MVPs. First half of the season stuff. This is members of the media, we love this, especially when there's a bye week where it is. It's an easy thing. It's sort of like the all-star break in baseball. You can start saying, well, first half, look at this guy. I think there are probably a number of candidates on the defensive side of the football, maybe a couple on the offensive side that people may or may not think about. I have a few in the back of my head, but I'm going to cut you loose on this. Who do you see as the offensive and defensive MVP so far in the first half?
Well, on offense, I'd say Maurice, for the reasons I stated earlier. And then Paul Posluszny, On defense, he's our leading tackler. He's in top 15 for tackles in the NFL. But I could have named a number of guys on the defensive side of the ball, including Darryl Smith.
Yep.
And then I got to throw in their special teams. Josh Scobie is just playing so well. When you talk about 14 and 14 on field goals, and five of them are beyond 50 yards. And then all of his kickoffs have went into the end zone, and 19 have been touchbacks. So we do have to recognize him for what he's done this first half of the season.
Every single kickoff has been in the end zone there. I didn't realize that. Doesn't surprise me the way a strong leg that he has, but every now and again you can see a miss hit or something. A guy, you know, hits it 5 yards shorter than he would ordinarily. So he's been precision as well as being on the kickoff, depth and accuracy as far as a kicker. That's about all you can ask for. All right, let's talk about some of the issues that have cropped up, some things that looking back and then looking forward both. One of the things that's sort of been a rarely discussed comment has been the injury to Rashad Jennings. And I think that's been one of the things that has really been an issue for the offense, because you've had to put guys in different roles. To have a big, strong back like Rashad backing up Maurice was a different situation last year.
Well, it'd be nice to have him. It'd be nice to have Zach Miller. Mm-hmm. When you get into the season, you start having some injuries, and you still got to find ways to win. And, bottom line, you can't complain about what you don't have. You try to improve the players that you do have. And when you're able to acquire a guy like we did in Brian Robiski, certainly a couple weeks back, we had the opportunity to bring Mike Sims-Walker back here. You try to do some things in season to improve your roster, but certainly it's the out of season when the reality is that you can really get some things done working at the top end of your roster down.
All right, let's talk a little about the Robiski. I had a chance to meet him today for the first time in the locker room. Didn't realize he was as big as he is. My perception was he was a 5'10", 5'11 guy, but he's a pretty good size receiver.
Well, he's 6'3". He's 210 pounds, and certainly he's a guy that is more of a crafty type. He doesn't have elite speed, but for a bigger receiver, he has good speed. He's smooth. He would be somewhat like a younger Keenan McCardell. I mean, it's interesting. We have picked up some receivers, just like last year, Jason Hill, off the waiver wire. You know, the two best in Jaguar history, Jimmy Smith was cut twice. Yep. And certainly Keenan Cardell was cut from the Redskins, picked up by the Browns, really did not have an overly productive career with the Browns. The Jaguars had a chance to sign him as a free agent, and obviously the rest is history. But both of those players, very early in their career, had some struggles, but they both persevered through it. And a lot of times that happens with receivers. So it's a position where late in the draft or even off the waiver wire, sometimes off the street, you can certainly add a player and he can develop in time.
Some of the naysayers will say, well, geez, if he wasn't good enough to make it in Cleveland of all places, why would the Jaguars want him? What's the response to that?
Well, we did a lot of work on him coming out of college. He's without question, a class individual. His dad's the wide receiver coach up in Atlanta. His dad played in the league. He's been around football his whole life. He had a very productive career at Ohio State. Sometimes a change of scenery, a change of scheme, whatever it may be, a player may take off. Now, in saying that, what it does for your own team, anytime you can add a player to a position group, it creates competition, and a lot of times competition obviously will bring out the best in other players. So, it's good from a number of different angles.
All right, we got some Facebook, Twitter questions going on. These are, by the way, brought to us by our good friends at CopyFex. Gene, this is from Steven. Do you believe in drafting wide receivers in the first round, or are you going to continue to try and find diamonds in the rough in the third and fourth rounds?
Well, if it's the best available player when we're picking, we would take the receiver. We're not going to force a pick. It's one thing to say we need to upgrade the wide receiver position. It's another thing, we don't want to overdraft. So if the player's there in the first round or any round on our board for us to take, we'll certainly do that. And obviously receiver is typically a position that you can get year in and year out, which isn't like some positions in the draft. So I feel like certainly it's an area that we can address in the out of season to help our football team in 2012.
And we'll be speaking about receivers a little bit later on in the gene pool as well. One I think folks will want to stay tuned in for as we dissect that position. Here's a tweet from Brian who says, Gene, what will you be looking for from Gabbert in the second half of the season?
Well, obviously, more efficiency in the passing game. Obviously, it does start with Blaine. It starts with the quarterback. There's 10 other moving parts, and I feel like he's got to do a better job of setting his feet to throw. Sometimes in the pocket when you're sliding, you have to be cognizant of resetting your feet to throw. I mean, you have better balance, which allows you to throw with better accuracy. And along with that, our receiving group as a whole has to play better. Our wide receivers, tight ends, running backs just catching the ball. And then the receivers in particular got to do a better job with their details, working back to the ball. Some of the things that I think at the NFL level sometimes people take for granted is the fact, you know, catching the ball. That's one thing you got to continue to work on. You are what you emphasize, and we're dropping too many balls, and I feel like the second half of the season, if we do that alone, our passing game is going to improve.
All right, let's take a pause here as we unveil the first half scout's eye, unsung player of the first half. We have a lot of guesses coming in on Twitter and Facebook. Boy, there are a lot of guys who I think deserve some recognition here. Who was your pick for the first half scout's eye unsung player?
Well, I went with Dwight Lowry. reason being is he has started six games. He's had six pass breakups, two interceptions, and we traded for him on September the 3rd. Very easily could have went with Guy Wimper on offense, but Dwight coming in, like I said, in the situation that he did to have their production for our defense, I decided to go with him.
And as we mentioned, a number of guys who could have been candidates. A lot of good guesses coming in here, guys who I would have considered, you know, Uche Nwaneri, Jeremy Mincy, some others who were in the conversation as well. Some of those guys have become sung in the course of things, and some still maybe a little less sung than others. But Dwight Lowry is the first half Scout's Eye unsung player, and that comes straight from the general manager. All right, coming up here in the second half hour of Jaguars Monday, we're going to talk a little bit about mentioned the gene pool. We're going to break down the wide receiver position, talk about what it takes to get a wide receiver and, you know, what you look for. Also do want to take this time to welcome a new member of the Jaguars family. And, in fact, it hits close to, I want to say close to home for you, but close to office for you. Dana DeJarlay, who is Gene's assistant, and married to Jason DeJarlay, who was one of the Jaguar scouts, gave birth to Tanner on November the 4th, 7 pounds, 2 ounces, 19 inches. So congratulations, the second DeJarlay addition coming in here. So happy for Jason and Dana, of course, who keeps you straight. All the down back in the office. No crying, no whining in this office.
Dana is clearly a cut above, and I had the fortunate opportunity today to see Tanner and to see Dana, as Dana did stop in the office, believe it or not, today.
Is that right?
With her mom and her daughter.
Did you get a scouting report on Tanner?
Tanner was sleeping, so
she's a trooper coming in. How about that?
Well, she didn't come into work. She came in to take care of a few things, but knowing Dana, she certainly would have if asked. But no, she needs time to be a mother, and she's I'm certain a great one at that.
All right, so welcome in the newest member of the Jaguars family. All right, we'll take time out. News here at the bottom of the hour. Gene Pool when we come back. Also still to come, what did Gene think about the Alabama-LSU matchup? We'll talk a little college football as well as discussing the first half of the season, taking your tweets and Facebook comments as well. This is Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back, Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Here as we exit the bye week and get ready for the Indianapolis Colts, we'll preview the Jaguars and Colts coming up a little bit later on. Become part of Jaguars Advantage, the new Jaguars fan loyalty program. With Jaguars Advantage, season ticket owners can earn up to 15% cash back at hundreds of their favorite online retailers. For more information, go to jaguarsadvantage.com. All right, time now for an injury update brought to you by Baptist Health, Jacksonville Circle of Care. The two names that we were keeping a close eye on from last week, Blaine Gabbert and Evan Britton. Gabbert had the ribs. Doesn't look like that's going to be a problem at all. Britton did not practice today with the back. That will be updated later in the week, but certainly one of the things we'll be keeping a close eye on is Britton's potential return as the Jaguars get set to take on the winless Indianapolis Colts, and that is your injury update brought to you by Baptist Health, Jacksonville Circle of Care. All right, we've got the unsung player. We've got the first half unsung player, Dwight Lowry, and no sooner do we get that than we got a tweet from Ron saying, please sign, re-sign Lowry to a contract. So, clearly, it was all about making the unsung player. And now, hey, time to get it, get the contract negotiated. I don't know if Ron is Dwight's agent or not. Time now to jump into the gene pool as we examine the DNA of a position in the National Football League. And this week, this is one I think Jaguars fans will be looking forward to hearing about. The wide receiver position, by my deep and exhaustive research, average height 5'11", 185, 4.5 speed. Those are pretty round numbers, but I bet they're pretty close.
Close. Coming out of the combine last year, 6.012, 2.02, and 4.53. Starters in the NFL, 6.005, 2.02, 4.51.
So interesting that starters in the league are not necessarily as tall as the guys who were coming out of the draft last year. Got about an inch difference there. Those are sort of some of the measurables. People talk about looking at speed, and probably with wide receiver more than any other position on offense, speed is something that translates more to what you see on the field. What's the difference for a guy who runs 4.6 compared to a guy who runs 4.4?
Well, the ability to separate at the break point. There are some guys that are faster than quick. Other guys are quicker than fast. Certainly, you have to be able to separate from the defender to give the quarterback an opportunity to throw the ball to you in a window. So there's a lot of things that play into the success of a receiver at this level, and you actually have to be able to run a route at this level. That's why a lot of the bigger receivers early in their career sometimes struggle in the league because they come out of college. And really going back to high school where they can be physical, they can push off, they can lean, they can out-big corners until the ball's in the air. In the NFL, you got a five-yard chuck rule, so you might get beat up coming off the line, but once you get into your route, there's a corner that's just as fast or faster than you that you got to get off your hip and to be able to get out of your break and to get open to catch the ball.
In general, are rookie wide receivers coming into the league, are they deficient in terms of route running?
Not as much as what they used to be. I think there's more of an emphasis on the passing game today, so the quarterbacks and receivers are more developed. I think the biggest thing they struggle with initially is getting off the line in the NFL.
All right, what's the ideal size? Is there such a thing for a wide receiver? I mean, if you could go into Frankenstein's basement and put together the perfect receiver, what would you like to see physically?
Well, I like bigger players, but there's always exceptions to the rule. I don't know. I'll go off of the combine and the pro starters. Let's say at least 6 foot, at least 200 pounds, mm-hmm. and at least 4 or 5.
Yeah.
I think the big thing you got to understand is you can be big, you can be fast, you can be tough, but you still got to be able to catch the ball. I mean, that's the number one thing. And then I talked about separation quickness. Also, your ability to react to the ball in the air, whether it's tracking it over your outside shoulder.
Can that be developed, or is that innate?
I think that's innate some. Yeah. It's like timing your jump. You can work on high-pointing the ball, all different types of individual drills, and then you get into a game, and it's the same thing, not just for a wide receiver, but also for a corner. You know, some guys time their jumps and high point better than other guys, no matter how much you work on it in practice.
You think of a guy like Lynn Swann, Randy Moss, Calvin Johnson, a lot of these guys who always seem to be able to – now, all those guys had physical advantages over most of the guys who were covering them, but guys who were always able to go up and get it very well. Non-measurables. There is a reputation among wide receivers as being a little more divas than other positions. Well-founded? Are you okay with that, if a guy's got a little bit of that diva attitude?
Well, there's a cocky confidence that I think you got to have to play wide receiver or really, really corner. You get into a lot of one-on-one matchups to where a lot of people can see how well you're going to perform. Sometimes you get hidden inside if you're in the interior offensive line, but when you're out on the edges, you know, the wide receivers, the left tackle, you get an opportunity to win one-on-one, and it's those type of matchups that we really like to study to see how many times they win in contested situations.
So when you're scouting, say, a college wide receiver, you also have to know, especially in that situation, how good that corner is that he's going against.
No question. And a lot of times we don't get a chance to really see press coverage until they get to an all-star game. There's a lot of teams in college that play a lot of zone coverage. We don't get a chance to see elite matchups sometimes until you know, the all-star game. So when you look at the league, there's a lot of different types of receivers that are productive today.
All right, so we've seen the little guys. There was a trend for a while, the Smurfs with the Redskins and so forth, and you had big, tall receivers on something, including here in Jacksonville, had a good-looking basketball team playing wide receiver at one point. Any sort of trend that we're seeing now? Are we league-wide? Is there a trend for size or a trend for a specific type of receiver?
Well, I think the receivers are bigger. The corners have certainly gotten bigger. You're seeing a lot of offenses now attack the safeties and linebackers. They're not attacking maybe as much as what you saw in the past on the outside because, you know, they're getting better matchups on the inside against the third corner. And like I said, primarily linebackers and safeties, especially when they stay base defense with their linebackers. The one thing that I would say, you go from a Calvin Johnson who's 6'5", 234, and he ran a 4.29 coming out, all the way down to a Steve Smith that's 5'9", 184, who ran 4.39. So when you look at the league, everyone's familiar with Andre Johnson in our division. Certainly Larry Fitzgerald made some elite plays since he's been in the NFL. Roddy White up in Atlanta. And then some young receivers, A.J. Green, who we saw this year, Dez Bryant, who we saw last year, Mike Wallace, who we saw this year. You know, there's a number of different types of receivers. But again, Kelvin's 6'5 and Steve's 5'9, and they're both highly productive.
Yeah. All right, so in the who is best conversation, best all time, best right now, best you ever scouted, what? Take your pick, but who are your best wide receivers?
Well, I picked out three guys. Jerry Rice, I think, would be a consensus out of Mississippi Valley State. Just tremendous production. And he was 6'2", 200. He had good speed. He didn't have elite speed, but he's such a smooth receiver. And then I'm going to throw in there Bullet Bob Hayes, Jacksonville native, played at Florida A&M. I think most people here know his story. He's the only man to ever win Olympic gold in a Super Bowl ring. Paul Warfield, I'll go with him. I saw a lot of highlights growing up. He's a former Ohio State Buckeye, and he played, you know, for the Browns and with the Dolphins. All three of those guys in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and there's a lot of receivers you could pick. Those are the three that I would.
And it would be an easy conversation to name the top two receivers in Jaguars history. Jaguars had two of the best, not just of their time, but of all time. Talk about Jimmy Smith and Keenan McCardell, and the numbers back that up. All right, so that is the Gene Pool for this week, examining the wide receiver position. All right, we'll take time out here. We come back, more of your comments and questions from Twitter and Facebook. We'll ask about the Alabama-LSU game in preview, the Colts and Jaguars, coming up on Sunday in Indianapolis. We're back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio. We welcome you back. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Cole Pepper, Joe Fortunato here at Jaguars Central. Fans, just text BBQ to 72239 and enter for a chance to win the Sunny's Game Ball Delivery Contest. You could hand the game ball to the ref at the start of the next Jaguars home game. More tweets and Facebook comments coming up here as we continue on. Here's one from Justin. If Brian Rubisky is like a younger Keenan McCardell, why would the Browns cut him? They're hurting a receiver too.
Well, I think you got to ask the same question why the Redskins would cut Keenan McCardell a number of years back. I'm not saying that's who he'll become, but that's the type of receiver he is. And you never know what a player's going to become early in his career. There's a lot of different factors that play into a player's success, and hopefully a change of scenery. Who knows what Brian will become, but certainly I would not say he's the next Keenan McCardell, but he's that type of receiver. Not exceptionally fast, very crafty, and natural hands.
Gene, this is interesting from Edward. Does Bradfield have experience at right tackle? He looks raw, but with Uche and Lewis next to him, we can develop and protect him. How about using him as tight end sometimes?
Well, we actually do sometimes when we go to our like heavy package where we have three tight ends in the game. If he's up on game day, meaning active, you typically you have seven offensive linemen up. He could be used in goal line short yardage as the third tight end. So on the line, you could have him and Mercedes Lewis, and the wing could be Zach Potter.
It's pretty good muscle on that side if you want to line those guys up. Another question here from Sam, who asked, have you been surprised by the lack of production from Cecil Shorts thus far?
Yes, because he's outstanding in training camp. And then he gets into the season, never got into his groove. And part of playing receiver is opportunities. And I know they'll come in time. He's coming off, actually, two soft tissue injuries. Hopefully he'll be back this week. But I think, without question, the second half of the season, and certainly as he gets established in the NFL, he'll develop into a very good player.
All right. Got to get a thought from me on the Alabama-LSU game. Some would say a slugfest. It was billed as the game this year's game of the century. College football loves to have this year's game of the century. Certainly a low-scoring game. Went down to overtime, and field goals decided. What do you think of the game?
Well, no question, it was intense. Great passion. Mm-hmm. A lot of team speed. Outstanding athleticism on both sides of the line of scrimmage. It's nice to see you can still win with defense in a kicking game. I just thought when you look at SEC football, it's really the next best thing to the NFL. Just great, like I said, intensity and passion for their sport. And I feel like we'll get a chance to see them play again this year.
You think they'll rematch for a national championship, huh?
There's a chance of that.
Yeah, there certainly is. Well, this would open up a whole other topic.
A lot of things would have to fall into place, but I think there's a real possibility.
And the question of whether they should would be a whole other conversation. Here's a question here from Robert, who says, has Chasten West progressed enough to make a difference?
I think he'll contribute down the stretch. As to how much is really up to him. He's had some days where he's done some outstanding things, but he has to take another step in order to help our position group.
All right. Right now around the National Football League, the Packers are the only undefeated team. Indy now the only winless team remaining at 0-9 after losing to Atlanta 31-7 yesterday. The AFC South looks like this. Houston Texans are 6-3 after beating Cleveland 30-12. Titans now 4-4 after losing to Cincinnati 24-17. The Jaguars at 2-6. So Indy coming up here this weekend, a 1 o'clock kickoff in Indianapolis. Boy, it's strange to be going into an Indianapolis week not talking about Peyton Manning, is it?
No question. Who would ever thought that their team would be in this position losing one player?
And the question, I guess, that I'll ask you is, if Manning was in there, would they be contending for the division? Is that would he make that much of a difference?
Well, I think they would be a contender. I don't know what their record would be at this point, but he certainly has made an impact in that franchise for a long time.
Yeah, and it's also interesting if you want to take a little bit of an examination, and this has been written about a couple different places, if you want to take a look at the way that the draft picks have gone for Indy over the last 3, 4, 5 years and see how what happens if you miss on draft picks here and there. They've had some they had a stretch there for a while where they were bringing in star after Bob Sanders and Dallas Clark, and you know, the list goes on and on. But if you don't hit, if you start missing a lot, well, we know what happens, and in some ways that's what's happened there. Bob Sanders not being there with Indy, it was a free agent. Of course, he missed a lot of games over the last several years with injuries. How much of an impact is it on that defense to not have Bob Sanders there?
Well, it's a big loss, but like you said, he really hasn't been a factor the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. You know, Bethea is a good safety. They're lining up with another guy who's young at the position. And last year they played a couple different guys besides Bethea. I think, you know, they've been so used to scoring a lot of points in offense, and their defense was playing with a lead. Mm-hmm. And so you could kind of pin your ears back and go after the opposing quarterback. Now they're not able to do that. And I think people are lining up and running the ball probably more against them than what they're accustomed to. People used to have to obviously throw the ball to play catch-up. Franey and Mathis aren't playing as much on run downs as they have in the past, but they're still bringing it off the edge. They still bring that presence on their defense.
All right, so every week we like to look at one of the key matchups, something to, you know, the game within the game to watch, to keep an eye on things as folks are watching on TV and hopefully listening to the radio broadcast at the same time. What should they be looking for against the Colts?
Well, the one thing I would always look for is Franey and Mathis on defense. Certainly matching up with our two tackles, Guy Wimper on the right side and Eugene Monroe on the left side. I feel like that will be a good matchup because certainly we want to be able to protect Blaine well, so he can be effective throwing the ball, because I feel confident our passing game will start to make strides. And Cole, if you really look at it, we played against four of the top five defenses on consecutive weeks, mm-hmm. So we're going to get into a stretch here that hopefully will, I don't want to say completely come up for air, but have a chance to do some better things on offense.
Yeah, Indianapolis ranked 31st on defense. They're 31st against the run, 24th against the pass. They're also 31st on offense, by the way, so maybe sometimes the statistics don't lie when you talk about the record and some of the numbers as it shapes out that way. Jaguars, 5th in the league in defense, 8th against the pass, 12th against the run, and again, 32nd in offense, and it was a murderer's row. You talk about the defenses the Jaguars have faced of late. Second half of the season looks like there's some opportunities to make some hay, so we'll see if it starts on Sunday in Indianapolis. Gene, thanks a lot. We appreciate it, and look forward to a better second half.
Well, thank you, Cole. Thank you, Joe. And again, thanks to all the passionate Jaguar fans who follow the team.
All right. Tomorrow night, the Jack Del Rio Show, 6 o'clock. Brian Sexton will have the head coach right here. Then Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on Wednesday, beginning at 6. Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show gets our coverage started on Sunday at 10 o'clock, followed by the Sudeth Pregame Show and kickoff at 1 o'clock from Indianapolis as the Jaguars take on the Indianapolis Colts, the only winless team remaining in the National Football League. Jaguars will try to start the second half of the season the same way they started the first half of the season, that is with a victory against an AFC South opponent. Remember, they beat the Titans to start the year. That was a home game. This one will be on the road, and we'll have coverage beginning at 10 o'clock. For the general manager, Gene Smith, for producer Joe Fortunato, Cole Pepper saying thanks for listening to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith, and good night from Jaguar Central.